Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings, I'm Andrew McDermott. Today I'm concluding my conversation with Dr. Jeffrey Simmons, a retired internal medicine physician and a fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. He is author of Billions of Missing Links and What Darwin Didn't Know, both published by Harvest House. Dr. Simmons has studied the human body and evolutionary theory through a career that has spanned 45 years. His latest book is called Are We Here to Recreate Ourselves? The Convergence of Designs. Jeffrey, welcome back.
Thank you.
So glad we can conclude our conversation today. In our previous discussions, you reviewed with us some of the amazing evidence for intelligent design at conception and in prenatal development of a human being right up to delivery. You also discussed the evidence of intelligent design in our five senses. Your latest book takes that evidence of design in humans and applies it to the questions we're now facing with artificial intelligence and machine learning. Can you remind us why you wrote this book and why you gave it the title you did?
The reason I wrote this book had to do with a thought that I had for a very, very long time, sensing patterns that we are recreating ourselves. There may be a lot of other things that we are doing and goals and purposes, but a thread of recreating yourself is just there, from making dolls in caves thousands of years ago to mannequins to statues onto humanoids, and going from glass on the beach from a lightning strike to binoculars and eyeglasses and onto vision with machines. And so everything seems to be heading, not everything, but awful lot of things are heading toward recreating ourselves. And so can't help but wonder if that's not one of our purposes in life. I certainly want to throw it out there. And everything that we do, it seems like the machines are learning to copy. They're learning to walk, talk, and do lots of things that we do the way we do it. Some of them are like libraries now with everything that one could ever want to know and more, yet in a tiny, tiny space. All the libraries in the world would take up probably a whole city, and yet you can get almost all that information now in something kind of nebulous that you can't measure. And so I wanted to say that in particular. I've got two books have to do intelligent design, so I kind of threaded intelligent design and the argument with evolution through it to show how difficult it is to recreate a person and what's needed and what isn't. And also some of the flaws in each and some of the beliefs in each, but with the theory of evolution, the gaps are getting wider and deeper. It just doesn't fit modern theories now.
Yeah. And that is one thing I appreciate about your book is at this poignant time in history where we're looking at machines and we're looking at recreating parts of ourselves in artificial intelligence. It's good to look at the human body. It's good to look at our mind. It's good to see what we think is irreducible and what isn't. It's just a great conversation to have. So I really appreciate what you've brought to the table with that.
Well, thank you.
Let's look at, we've looked at various systems so far. What about the neurological system? Let's look at the brain and the mind for a few minutes here. What to you seems intelligently designed about the neurological system?
Yeah, I wish I had several hours to go into this, because maybe a lifetime to talk about it. But in a short period of time, one can look at a nerve cell as sort of a relay tower for Verizon or AT&T, yet 1,000 or 10,000 fold, and then put 35 trillion of them together to function like a brain, sending messages to each other and telling each other what to do. It's much more sophisticated than just those towers, but that's one way to view it. If you look at the nerve cell under a microscope, it's incredible what's going on. It's like a tree with all the branches and the smaller branches and then into the twigs, I guess, and the leaves. It's like an amorphous tree going every direction. And as we collect information, we seem to increase the branchings on this and the connections. And it's just not the physical part, but also there can be as many as 40 different chemicals in between the nerve cells to help communicate. And if one looks at the brain itself, it's usually around 75 trillion cells in an adult, and everything has specific areas. Eyes, vision come from one area, hearing from another area. So it's separated out. There's a period of time in the neonate where virtually 250,000 cells migrate in the brain to where they're supposed to go every minute. In other words, they're like runners of sort on a trip that requires climbing and swimming and slipping through. And I mean, all kind, and they know where to go and how to set up and how to connect. Note, blood vessels travel through the bones of the skull and very distinct patterns to get to and from certain parts of the brain. The spinal cord has a definite exit in the back of the head. These are passageways that had to have been designed in advance. Would you have the passageways first, or would you have the blood vessels first? You have to have them together. And one of the interesting things, I think, is we don't come with instructions to use our brain. We don't, and we do. There are some biological mechanism that kicks in as we're developing in the uterus and certainly as a baby, sucking in information like a sponge. But we don't have instructions. We just know how to use it. Ask anybody how to use their brain. And yeah, there's some how-to books, but we really don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look where the nerves go and what they do. They bring back such information, such as touch. I mean, it's not just touching, but is what does it feel like? What's the texture? Is it hot or cold? Is it firm? Does it cause pain? These things are all there. They are purposeful. And so we design robots to detect a lot of this too. It's copying us again. We're, again, recreating ourselves.
Yeah. Well, it's an amazing system for sure. What do we know about thinking and memory? We've been looking at that recently. We scientists are really trying hard to figure out consciousness and how it relates to the physical brain and the material brain. What do we know about thinking and memory?
Well, we think that we have a lot of information, but I think it's probably a minor thumbnail sketch. I mean, thinking can be broken down in a variety of ways, but inside experience and problem solving is a simple way to look at it. And we have to go through lots of steps, and yet we seem to do this instantaneously, thinking. It's very hard for evolution to explain thinking. The data is very sparse at best. We know that there's certain gamma waves in our brain we can measure that have to do with memory and processing, and beta waves that have to do with consciousness and problem solving. We know that people who are severely injured, quadriplegics, are learning to do brain to text with electrodes in their brain, and they can text what they want to say. It's very, very interesting. We don't do that with healthy volunteers. We have brain to action too, making maybe some of the limbs work better or work at all. And in fact, the military is looking at something called brain to brain, where they think that we may be able to communicate sometime silently brain to brain. Our thinking is complicated. We mourn the dead. We're altruistic. We're empathetic. We have multiple languages. We're self-aware. Hard to explain that came about with evolution. And notably, again, just going back to my book, I talk about how a lot of this is being looked at with AI, artificial intelligence. I mean, if we need to have humanoids and robots looking and acting like us, they need to at least pretend that they're human, I think, depending on the scenario. Otherwise, they're a dead giveaway. And so the question comes up, are we going to put serial numbers on their forehead, or are we going to just mix them in and try and make them look like people and act like people?
Yeah. Well, do you think we'll ever reproduce the mind? And do we need to?
I think we're going to come close. I think we're trying to come close. And one might ask, why are we doing this? We seem to be driven to do this, as if it is determined in our genes to do this. One could argue maybe war and war models and combat issues are driving us. One might argue that industrial needs are driving us to do this. But we're recreating ourselves. We have robots, humanoids now, who greet shoppers as they come into large department stores, and they can speak like 26 languages. Try to find a human who can do that. They can act like us. This is just the beginning. This, I think, is just the Model T Ford and maybe the pre-Model T Ford that we're looking at. I would love to speed ahead into the future and see what they look like. I think I would. I mean, there's a lot of worries with this as well.
Yeah, there's a real diversity of thought on this topic among our thinkers at Discovery Institute. You know, some people at large believe that AI will develop consciousness and exceed human capacity in all ways, including creativity. And then there are some like Bill Dembski, Michael Agnor, Jay Richards, and Bob Marks, whose work can be found at our Walter Bradley Center site and the Mind Matters podcast, who take the view that faster and faster processing speeds and more clever computer algorithms will never make the qualitative leap to consciousness or true creativity. It really is a fascinating discussion, and it's great to have a variety of stimulating perspectives. Remind us what your view is with that. Do you think the singularity is coming? As you said, this is just the beginning of what we're doing with machines. What are we doing? It seems to be like we're giving them jobs that we don't want to do or that would be hard for one person to do. What is the end game? Like, what is our purpose?
Maybe they're going to be giving us jobs we don't want to do at some point. I think consciousness is very hard to define. I don't think anybody has a good feel of what it is. It's something like qualia. If you were from outer space and you came down here and I wanted to tell you what an orange tastes like and you have nothing, no experience, so I can't compare the taste to anything, how on earth do I tell you what an orange tastes like unless you've ever tasted it? What do I tell you the color red is if I can't compare it to something or show you something with red? How can I explain it? So consciousness kind of falls into this nebulous thing. My personal feeling on this, and there's a lot of people out there with incredibly better credentials, but I've done an awful lot of reading, research, and speaking. I think we're going to come close to mimicking it, but I don't think we're going to get it there. I think it's going to be very, very hard to separate out the AI entity, individual, from the real person at some point, but we're not anywhere close. I talk about it a bit in my book, and I've talked about maybe some ways to fool them and test them, but I think the people who are developing these are going to know all these tests. I recommend if you, in the future, if you're around and you don't know if you're talking to a humanoid or a real person, you ask them if you can prick their finger with a needle and see if they bleed. That would give it away. You might say, would you mind putting this thermometer in your mouth or whatever, under your armpit or something? They're not likely to be temperatures that we are. They're more likely to be room temperature. I'm not so sure that mentally we're going to be able to tell them apart. Also, you know, we have what's I call the Jiminy Cricket phenomenon, where we have Jiminy Cricket on one shoulder and Lampwick on the other from Pinocchio, and we have voices that tell us to do something good and some voices tell us to do something bad. I don't see that happening. And these are hard to explain what this is. Is this the body and the soul? Is it Freud's id and ego? But it's there. We all have voices. We all have people talking. Some of us have more than one voice talking. Who are we talking to? They're not going to have that, I don't think. But I do think they're going to be able to have significant mimics.
Well, whatever we do with machines, it sure seems like we're mimicking designs that have already been produced and built into life in the universe. And it's fascinating to look at that and see where we're headed and what the limitations might be and also the rights and wrongs of it all. So again, Jeffrey, I really appreciate you taking the time to break this down for us. That is all the time we have for this episode, but thank you for reminding us of the amazing design of our bodies and how it could help us as we move forward in the future. If you've enjoyed our chat about Are We Here to Recreate Ourselves, you can get a copy on Amazon. And if you haven't listened to the first two parts of my chat with Dr. Simmons, find them and plenty of other episodes at idthefuture.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. For ID the Future, I'm Andrew McDermott. Thanks for tuning in.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.